Movie Pipe.
Movie Pipe.
Movie Pipe.
Movie Pipe.
Say it.
Say it. Say it.
Movie Pipe.
Movie
Pipe.
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 Movie Pipe.
Movie
Pipe to Pipe Bushman.
We've got to return some videotapes.
Can you believe Paul left this morning? He didn't even say goodbye. I heard the door unlock because it's an automated, sort of an electronic lock that's connected to the cell phone. So you get an alert, a notification every time the door opens. I heard that about 6:30 a.m. as I was waking up this morning. And I look out the window and I see Paul sprinting away from the compound where he lives, because he lives in the attic. And I haven't heard from him since. It's now 9:30 and I'm actually having to make my own breakfast this morning, dear pipeheads. Can you believe that? The sound you hear is me putting peanut butter on toast, and then I'm going to cut up a banana and put the banana on top of the peanut buttered bread toast, and then I'm going to drizzle some organic raw honey over the top of the banana, which is on the peanut buttered bread, the toast, and I'm going to eat that because Paul has fucked off somewhere. He hasn't messaged. There's no note. He hasn't left a note. Often he leaves a note on the fridge, even though he knows he's not allowed in the kitchen. But anyway, I allow that just for communication purposes. So Paul's gone. So I'm having to make my own breakfast whilst I record. And I've just come out of the screening room. Of the movie I'm going to talk about, just peeling a banana slowly here. Blimey. It's quite a large fruit. Okay, I've just come out of the screening room and I'm starving hungry, having spent 2 hours watching the film that we're going to talk about. This is me chopping the tip of the banana, just gently passing the sharp blade through the shaft of the aching fruit. So yeah, I'm a little bit annoyed. What Paul has done though, even though he didn't cook me or make me breakfast, he did leave me some readers' feedback, listeners' feedback. So I think what we'll do is, whilst I'm enjoying my extremely healthy breakfast, I will read out some of the that banana's good. I will read out some of the stuff from the readers, from the listeners. Just got to wash my hands, I've got it all over me. Goes everywhere, doesn't it? So let me just get those couple of pieces of paper. Look, here we go. Just gonna get those couple of pieces of paper in order so I can read from those pieces of paper. Okay. This is an email that Paul has printed out for me. And the subject line is Dinner with Andre. And it just starts with, "Listen up, cunts. The irony of two blokes talking for 2 hours whilst critiquing a movie about two blokes talking for 2 hours clearly isn't lost on Movie Pipe. I didn't need to ask Paul to rewind the last 10 minutes of the podcast for me to listen again because I didn't continue to listen long enough to hear it in the first time. As little as you liked this film, I liked this podcast less. That you had the audacity to expect your listeners to hear you waffle on for so long over what sounded like a dial-up connection is astounding, semicolon, and to suggest that Americans know what a real slice of bacon looks like, to even attempt to surpass a full English breakfast is an assault on my culture. I will not be listening again. An Englishman. He signs off with an Englishman. P.S. I haven't watched this film, but if I wanted it to be about Andre the Giant, it will be. Who are you to tell me otherwise? Now, dear Pipeheads, we really appreciate the readers', listeners' feedback and these emails and letters that we got. But this young man clearly has an unhealthy obsession with our podcast, and he can't stop listening. Why else would he feel motivated to send a message like this? And just, again, I'm not an expert, but I am picking up a few hints as I'm reading through, you know, the use of grammar, the types of, you know, the turns of phrase that he definitely plays chess, this person who wrote this email. Anyway, so that was from Lewis Geography. I think he revoked a donation a while back, yet he continues to listen and send us hate mail. Fake movie synopsis. Okay, Paul basically put this thing in front of me last night, and he asked me to read it out live on air. So apparently Paul was telling me as he was walking in the other direction, so I didn't fully hear him, but this is a list of Paul's teenage nephew's favourite films, and his nephew told Paul if he didn't get Gigi, me, to do it live on air, he'd tell his mum, Paul's sister, that I showed him how to use the World Wide Web to get pornographs. So I'm going to have to read this out, Pipeheads, so I can avoid that awkward conversation with Paul's sister. He's created an IMDb list. Okay, that's useful. And there's five movies here, so it shouldn't take too long. Okay, Paul's nephew's favourite films. Here's number one. Swallow, from 1999. And the synopsis here is, a New York City DA, Tom Sizemore, has to eat 3 meals a day to save his family's life when an unexpected visitor, Hugh Grant, shows up and begins cooking the contents of his fridge. Number two, Paul's nephew's second favourite film ever. How Big Is Too Big, 1998. A plane crash investigation lead a group of middle-aged scuba diving friends to confront an aquatic mystery from the depths of their pasts. Interesting. Number three of Paul's nephew's favourite movies in the whole entire universe. Number three, Blood Cover, 2000. A troubled photographer desperate to get the perfect shot of his young muse makes an error that forces him to turn to a serial killer for help. That sounds insane. Okay, and what is Paul's nephew's fourth favourite film since the beginning of time? Only a Baby Elephant Will Do, 1945. World War II Army Major is entrusted with an orphan baby's life and has to deliver the well-endowed child to an ancient Nepalese shaman before the cold kills him. So, number four there, I actually did an episode on that, didn't we? And number five, Paul's nephew's fifth favourite movie since Paul's nephew has been on planet Earth. Just bear that in mind. These are his five favourite movies. Never Chess for Lewis, 2020, that's a modern one. A reclusive nihilist fights against his temptation to play chess, a decision he comes to regret on account of shocking deathbed confessions. Okay, so I've avoided an awkward conversation with Paul's sister about ordering pornographs on the internet for her son, Paul's nephew. Okay, that's all the reader's news, listener's news. So actually, let's jump into the movie, shall we, that we're going to talk about here. It's the 2021 Paul Schrader written and directed by Paul Schrader. It's called The Card Counter. And this is a relatively new movie for the movie pipe list. Often our movies are a little bit older, aren't they? As you've probably noticed on the timeline, if you go back and look at some of the movies we've actually been forced to watch and review, we don't get a lot of recent ones. But I think because the committee saw that we have an appreciation of Paul Schrader's work, we did Light Sleeper, didn't we? And we've often touched on some others from the Schrader canon. So it was a nice surprise to walk into the screening room and see Oscar Isaac's face, big face, on the screen waiting for me. And then the film started. So I guess Paul had printed out a huge Oscar Isaac portrait and just attached it to the cinema screen in our private screening room. And then as the film started to, you know, started to play, that photo basically got, you know, it kind of went up, it got rolled up. So I'm not sure what Paul's been up to there, although he was banging the other night. So perhaps that's what he was doing. He was putting that big picture of Oscar. And I walked in, I was like, Jesus, Oscar, what are you doing here again? And then I realized it was just an enormous printout of his face. He wasn't actually like right up close to me. Anyway, redemption is the long game in Paul Schrader's The Card Counter. Told with Schrader's trademark cinematic intensity, the revenge thriller tells the story of an ex-military interrogator turned gambler haunted by the ghosts of his past. I mean, does it get much better than that for a synopsis? Like, just fucking load the die, my friends. Anyway, this was pretty good. I don't know if it's vintage Schrader. And just to jump to the very end, spoiler alert. And if you have watched or listened to the episode, at least do me that honour of listening to the episode on Light Sleeper. That's the one with Willem Dafoe and the salad, if you remember. At the end of that movie, there's a very poignant, emotionally resonant scene where Willem Dafoe's character is in jail and he puts his hand out and whoever the actor is opposite him, I forget their name now, but they touch hands. And that is a direct homage or rip-off, depending on where you sit on the film language spectrum, from the French movie called Pickpocket, from a director called Bresson. And it's a very famous movie. I won't go into it anymore because I did that on Light Sleeper. But Schrader has often written and spoken about the influence of that film on his own work. And he was paying homage to it in Light Sleeper. Now, going all the way to the end of The Card Counter, it's not really a spoiler, but guess what happens? Fucking Oscar Isaac and Tiffany Haddish, who's like the female lead in this movie, they do the exact same thing. Like, what is Schrader up to? Like, I get it, you do it once in Light Sleeper, but then you do it again in The Card Counter. It felt lazy. Now, I appreciate it for what it is, because I understand the meaning behind it. But for fuck's sake, don't do it twice. It now lessens the impact of Light Sleeper. If you go back and watch that movie, I allow one homage. Two, way too much. So I don't know what Schrader's doing there. I need to hear his defense of that strategy. Is he... Because Schrader's smart, and again, I like that. On the other one hand, it's annoying because it felt lazy. It's like, come on, man, you can finish this movie in a different way. It doesn't have to sort of mirror your other work. But perhaps that's the point. Perhaps he's sending a signal back through the cinematic timeline, his own career, and also the timeline, the history of cinema. So perhaps he is sending back a message. He's trying to connect his most current work to his biggest influence and also one of his best films, Light Sleeper. So I get it. Okay, Paul, Mr. Schrader, you know, you get a pass on that one, but I definitely need to have Paul, not Paul Schrader, Paul, my assistant, do some research and dig out what was Schrader thinking with the ending of The Card Counter. Now, everything leading up to the end was pretty interesting. Oscar Isaac, really like him as an actor, and I think he makes some really interesting choices when it comes to his the roles that he takes. And he's sort of a Christian Bale, I'd say, you know, in terms of he balances the blockbusters with the art house. And I think he makes some really smart moves. He has a lot of integrity. I think he's very thoughtful around the choices he makes. And when he chooses a role, he commits to it 100%. There's no phoning it in with Oscar Isaac. And he's an excellent, excellent actor. He has a great range. And you quickly forget that you're watching Oscar Isaac. And I think that's always a good measure of an actor is whether they're able to disguise their identity, their celebrity, their quirks. And I think Oscar Isaac does a great job of that. And, you know, there's an intensity that he brings to that because of that as well, which again, he shares with Bale, Christian Bale, that sort of intense. There's a seriousness to the ridiculous nature of what they have to do. Bale, you know, often talks about how it's a privilege to get to play make-believe, but his responsibility, because he's been gifted that opportunity, is to take it very seriously. So, you know, that's why he does a silly voice in Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, because he needed to commit to that 100% in order to deliver the emotionally resonant performance of which he did. So I respect that, the craft, the art, but also understanding the bigger picture, which is you got to sell fucking bums on seats, ain't you, mate? Yeah, you got to put some people in the cinema eating popcorn, buying $12 sodas. So anyway, The Card Counter, it's a great art house film. I'm not going to get too much into sort of the plot. It's a little long-winded, as with most Schrader's work. The direction can be a little too studied, because he is so reverent to everyone who's come before him in terms of, you know, directors. But I really appreciate that because he's a romantic. Paul Schrader is a romantic filmmaker. He imbues his work with meaning and symbolism, and it's not just surface level. And I think that's the sign of a great artist is he makes movies for himself, but through his body of work, there's clear, you know, there's themes that he takes risks. He's kind of like Billy Friedkin in that sense, because Friedkin in interviews says, yeah, I do a couple of takes. Sometimes it's blurry. Sometimes it's, you know, the sound isn't right. And it's like, okay. But he's all about getting, you know, getting things on screen, moving on, understanding that it's never going to be perfect. And there's kind of a gonzo quality to that, which I think, you know, Schrader and Friedkin share. So The Card Counter is a good example of kind of a modern interpretation of one of the Schrader sort of loner nihilist characters. Yes, there's a diary. Yes, there's voiceover. Yes, there's weird, obsessive, compulsive behaviours that Oscar Isaac's character displays. Example, he's a gambler. He goes around all these different casinos in different cities and spends a night or two, and he'll play a tournament, then he'll move on to the next one. But every hotel or motel that he goes into, he covers all of the furniture in white sheets. So he's kind of in this sterile environment. And I'm not 100% sure about the meaning there. It's a little bit open to interpretation. I think it's something to do with focus and removing distractions, and also that he spent a long time in jail. That's kind of where you meet him. He's kind of just sort of coming out of prison. He has a history of being in the military and has post-traumatic stress disorder. It's becomes evident throughout the movie that he was part of kind of Guantanamo Bay interrogations. So he's seen some shit, basically. And that sort of starts to kind of seep out, kind of comes through in his performance. Now, what's always interesting with Schrader is, are you actually watching reality or are you watching the protagonist's version of reality? And I think this movie treads a fine line. I think a lot of it is fantasy, you know, sort of what if scenarios, a little bit like Taxi Driver. You know, did Travis Bickle actually do those things? Or was it his imagination, his fantasies playing out? So that's why The Card Counter is an important film, because it, again, is underpinned with those classic Schrader traits. And you should definitely check it out. You got Willem Dafoe in there as well as kind of the antagonist, even though he's more of a plot device. He kind of is in service of the story rather than having an arc. But the kind of conclusion of the movie, the kind of inevitability of it, which is another trademark of Schrader, this kind of idea of fatalism and the inevitable outcome, which again, maybe that's why he had the kind of mirrored ending in The Card Counter like he had in Light Sleeper. Perhaps he's trying to refer back to the inevitability of a Paul Schrader movie. So that was Card Counter, The Card Counter. It's currently on HBO Max in the United States of gambling, and you know, check it out. You won't be disappointed. Oh, one thing, there's no salad in this movie as far as I can tell, so just don't worry, there's no rant about salad. All right, this was Movie Pipe.